University. He's going to talk about the influence of surfactants on transient behaviors and forced film space.
So I want to thank all of the organizers for giving me the opportunity to participate in this workshop and to tell you a little about some of my work, but more importantly, to learn from the interesting work of the other people in this meeting. So my talk is motivated by some work on the dynamics of tear films during blinking in the eye. But this workshop already has excellent representation of authorities in that area. So I want to go in a little bit of a different direction. I want to try to take this problem and use it as a motivation and generalize to other possible applications, not necessarily so tied to realistic parameter values, but something that we can use to more broadly understand interaction of thin film dynamics with surfactants and also driving forces in different ways on these thin film systems. To see what kinds of behavior can be present in these thin film problems and that may in some loose sense dynamically resemble the behaviors that are involved in during blinking and other applications. In particular, I'm thinking about some external forcing and also dynamics that are occurring on some finite time scales, like the time scales between blinks, which can be only just a few seconds. So you're not going to be necessarily close to approaching equilibrium, depending on what the time scales of different processes in the system might be. So I've worked on thin film dynamics for quite a while. All of my previous experience has been primarily in thin film dynamics for pure liquids and in looking at rupture or de-wetting. And so I've kind of gotten various results, but now starting to look at problems with surfactants, I find things much more complicated. I was told I should put more modern and current references, so the only thing I could think of is trying to describe this in relation to Facebook or something. So I know surfactants and thin films are connected, they're coupled together, so they must be in a relationship or something, but I mean, I don't really know if that relationship is a happy, constructive relationship, or if sometimes it can be antagonistic, or if it does vary situation to situation. I mean, maybe the best I can do, I mean, so far I'm going to tell you a little bit of a messy story about what I found, but maybe the best I can do to generally say what surfactants, how they relate to thin films is, it's complicated. I mean... everyone, please interrupt and give me more. I'm very sure there are lots of things I'm not so well informed on, but this is very preliminary stuff, and I was meant to motivate or possibly antagonize and provoke a discussion. So I'm gonna. Which the laser pointer. So I want to talk mainly about external forcing driving thin film dynamics and how the various parameters describing the thin films and addition of surfactants may give us qualitatively different looking behaviors. And also comparing the transient dynamics, because a lot of things we'll be interested in will be occurring not going to steady state, but in finite time situations where the forcing may change in different regimes of the situation, like the dynamics of blink downstroke versus upstroke, as described in a previous talk. We can compare the transient dynamics to quasi-steady evolution if things are happening on slow time scales relatively. Are there going to be possible differences that we may see in the transients that are different than quasi-steady evolution? Can those things lead to instabilities that may be problematic, leading to rupture or de-wetting? I'm seeing this as having applications to finite time stage processes, downstroke, upstroke during blinking, or other kind of industrial processes where you're not going to let the film evolve ad infinitum, but you have to let it evolve for like a finite time and then move on to the next stage of the process and doing the best you can with what happened during that finite time evolution. And maybe this could long-term be used to identify parameter ranges for safe operating processes or understanding what kind of selects the parameters that may have been chosen by evolution and the composition of tear films or other things. So this is going to be a very preliminary and first principles kind of numerical exploration of parameter dependence in the system. And I'll relate to like one classical fluid dynamics model. There are probably other systems that that probably would shed insight on this problem, and please, if you think of connections, please help make me aware of them. So the motivation again will be film thinning during blinking, during kind of the upstroke or like the opening phase of blinking. And I want to, what can I say about the minimum film thickness? So I'm thinking about that, the aqueous layer, and will it come close to being in danger of rupturing or drying out? Or does surfactant actually help that, or possibly can it hinder it by making this lower or higher? And we'll consider different limits of the parameters and the influence of surfactants on the dynamics. And I'll mention a paper I did with people at Oxford on this, and motivated by some work by illustrious people in the audience who spoke before and immediately after me. Okay, so here is general motivation from blinking. I have borrowed or stolen a picture from Rich Braun's very nice review paper on blinking and tear film dynamics. So here's a picture of an eye and from different angles and different views. But I want to talk about the tear film, just thinking of it as a fluid layer coating the surface of the eye, and then there's going to be some lipids, which I'll just consider insoluble surfactant on top of that. And during blinking, this layer is spread over the eye, and I'm going to think about the opening phase where the film spreads out as the upper eyelid moves to expose a larger area of the eyeball, and then that the initially compressed film layer, which is shown here, has to spread out, and it's pinned at the edge by those glands, and so that the finite volume, assuming no evaporation, gets thinned out as it has to spread out to cover a lot wider range. And yes, the level of realism in this talk is accurately depicted by this plot. The skin is blue, so I'm actually about as realistic as the aliens in Avatar. And the eyes are going to be roughly this size. More seriously, I want to consider ignoring the other realistic effects of evaporation and maybe flux of fluid under the upper eyelid. I want to consider this as a kind of prototypical mathematical form for a moving boundary problem, and how does a moving boundary influence how can that possibly drive rupture or thinning of this film? What can I understand from this? So one kind of force thing on this kind of problem is having a boundary moving. I'll also consider a different kind of force thing at the end if I get to the second part of my talk. And I don't want to consider not just steady state, approaching steady state behaviors or asymptotics for long times, but transient motions, because that's going to be more relevant in finite times. Okay. So let me, probably the audience doesn't need this, but I'll quickly review the model just so you can see my notation. So use a lubrication model, and I'll have I'll point to now newly classic review article, very comprehensive and thorough, showing the background appropriate for this. But let me denote the film thickness as height h of position x and time t, and the surfactant concentration is going to be given by capital gamma. And I want to describe in terms of the in-plane velocity field, I can write down two conservation laws: conservation of mass for the fluid layer and conservation of surfactant on top of the fluid layer. So the conservation of mass equation is going to give us an evolution equation for the height of the layer in terms of the depth averaged or the depth integrated velocity field as a flux. And the conservation of surfactant is going to be an evolution equation for the surfactant concentration involving a flux with the velocity field just at the surface. So using the usual steps of considering this to be very viscous fluid, so we're in the regime of low Reynolds number flow, Navier-Stokes reduces down to the Stokes equations, And further, assuming that we have a shallow layer limit or long wave limit, we reduce the Stokes equations supplemented with appropriate boundary conditions of no slip at the lower surface and stress balance at the free surface. We reduce the Stokes equations down to a Reynolds lubrication equation, which equivalently corresponds to reducing the full velocity field down to basically just a polynomial approximation depending on the depth variable. So, and based on these things, the velocity field is going to look like a quadratic polynomial times the gradient of a pressure and a linear term, so like a couette flow. So this is a semi-parabolic or Poiseuille type flow, and this is a couette flow based on the gradients of the surface tension induced due to the presence of surfactants. So possible Marangoni stresses here, and pressure contributions from body forces and surface tension get incorporated into that term. So surface tension, I'll take the simplest possible model, just the linear dependence of, for the Marangoni stresses, I'll just use this simple, very simplified linear approximation for the influence of the concentration of surfactant on things. For pressure, I'll incorporate a couple of different terms. So capillarity, surface tension from the curvature of the free surface. I'll include van der Waals terms just to prevent actual finite time rupture and real de-wetting that would prevent things that would cause things that would make the situation die off. So I want to have solutions that are always going to be bounded by some minimum. That minimum is going to be set by the value for this roughly a Hamaker constant, which I call capital V, but I'll always have this be a very small parameter. So it's never going to play a significant role, but it means that all of my solutions in this problem will never actually de-wet. They will always be bounded from below by some positive constant. And even more bizarrely, but I'll explain this later, I'll include possible other terms like centrifugal effects. So don't think about your eyes spinning. I'll consider a different problem that I want to try to relate and convince you that there is some vague connection or some similarity for blinking and spin coding problems. So mainly my focus will be on boundary-driven thinning, so problems like blinking, the opening phase. But at the end, I'll have like one or two slides about body force-driven thinning in relation to spin coding. I'll try to convince you there is some connection between these two and some reason to kind of put them together in some way. Okay, so here are the equations kind of written out in detail. Point to a reference where I had this originally or first detailed presentation I saw. And so I'll simplify the problem. So it's not real eyes. There's no gravity, which would pull the film down in one direction. Non-rotating goes without saying, but also this is 1D. I'm not considering the real geometry of the eye in two dimensions. But this is the main thing I want to describe is boundary-driven thinning, like the motion of the eyelid. Yes. Yes, that would be that could be an important generalization. And yeah, do you think more should be the concentration of the surfactant or the film height or in some way? Hmm. Okay. That's a good point. Right. And that would be an interesting thing to try to include and see if it has differences. I'm actually in this model, I'm only considering the influence of surfactants on these Marangoni terms. And properly, I should have the surfactants modifying the surface tension in these terms as well, but the variability of the surfactants is not going to be that big. So it's not going to change the surface tension by that much, but it can induce these Marangoni stresses I want to see what that does in coupling to the system. So so this slide is mainly me putting disclaimers on how unrealistic or simplified this model is going to be. So no gravity. And I'm also not really going to consider an upper eyelid that's moving and a lower eyelid that's fixed. I wanted this to be more mathematically clean, so I wanted to make a symmetric situation where both, I don't know if there's any animal at all that has an eye like this, but I wanted both eyelids to move out symmetrically, just so I can kind of distinguish for a simplified mathematical presentation and identifying where the film thinning out is happening in a primary way. So I'll have Dirichlet boundary conditions at the moving boundaries to correspond to the presence of those glands, kind of indicating where the kind of wetting surface is versus where the skin changes to de-wetting. So the height is going to be pinned at normalized height, and there's going to be no flux of mass or surfactant out of this domain. So that's a great simplification. And I'll assume both boundaries are moving with equal and opposite speeds, so it'll be a symmetric problem. That simplifies things. So here are the two versions of the problem. Well, one, so the equations are kind of being repeated, but I'm mainly focusing attention here on the details of what the boundary conditions are at the moving boundary. So if I have no surfactant, so if it's just pure fluid, then the boundary condition for no flux corresponds to this, I mean, gives this in terms of the flux and the relation to the speed of the moving boundary. If I have both surfactant and fluid film, then there's a factor of, there are some other factors that come in to the boundary condition at the moving boundary. And in particular, here I notice there is a factor of 2 that's different from there. And here there is a factor of 2 over the Marangoni number, which can be make for a significant difference that I'll show on upcoming slides. And I'll start with normalized initial conditions for the amount of the fixed volume for the fluid and a fixed volume for the surfactant that's in the problem. And length will start at 1 and will be increasing, a monotone increasing function of time. So I want to quickly consider how the different parameters in the problem affect what we might see. So first, comparison of with and without surfactant, and what does Marangoni number do for us in this problem? So control case without surfactant, just a thin film spreading and thinning due to a boundary moving out. So this vertical line kind of indicates the position of the boundary, and these curves are time profiles at different times where the boundary has moved out to the end point that you can see indicated here. And you can see initially the film lowers, and then as the boundary moves further out, it kind of spreads out in a different way. And the minimum moves out that way. I'll talk more about that later. In the full situation where I have surfactant and thin film, the profiles here in red are the film height, and here are the surfactant. And the dots here correspond to the same profiles there without surfactant. So there's very little difference in the height profile if the Marangoni number is small. But what the surfactant is doing actually exhibits a boundary layer. So there's going to be a rapid increase in the amount of surfactant at the moving eyelid. So there's basically a boundary layer right at the moving boundary where the surfactant collects. In the outer, the rest of the eye, it's basically kind of a slowly varying outer solution. So, there should be no flux. I mean, so it clearly this indicates if m goes to 0, if the Marangoni number is going to 0, then I should expect a large gradient for the surfactant there. So this does kind of go along with what you see in this picture, and that does kind of conserve the total volume of surfactant. So I think that is correct, though it was something unexpected to me based on how it looked. The full system, if I increase the Marangoni number, then I see kind of more complications. So the blue curves are now the corresponding height and surfactant behaviors, time profiles at different times with order 1 Marangoni number compared to the red, which are a reproduction of these curves with small Marangoni number. And we see that the surfactant concentration is now kind of bounded in within a range that's more controlled. However, my main interest is more in what the effect is on the film thickness, and that's a little more complicated. Early times, the minimum film thickness is higher, but later times, the minimum film thickness, which happens at kind of at the foot of the meniscus, is actually lowered compared to the case without surfactant. I mean, the case with a lower Marangoni number, or even the case without surfactants, because these two cases are basically the same for the film height. But now we see adding surfactant or adding stronger Marangoni effects has one effect for shorter times, another effect longer times, at least if I'm just thinking about the minimum film thickness. Okay, so now let me compare this, so let me try to interpret this in relation to quasi-steady behavior. So if I look at very large inverse capillary number and Marangoni numbers, or very slow motion of the upper eyelid, I can imagine that this is close to quasi-steady situation, where it kind of can eliminate the time derivative and just solve for solve ODEs for the coupled height and the surfactant concentration. And these are the ODEs that you get. So from this one, you see that the quasi-steady behavior of the surfactant is kind of boring. There's no structure. It's just going to be uniform concentration. By conservation of mass, it has to go down based on if the length is getting wider. But the fact that it's a uniform constant in space means that there are not going to be any Marangoni stresses entering this for a long time. So H is going to be independent of gamma, and I can solve for the quasi-steady H profile by itself from this ODE. If this Hamaker constant is small, then this term becomes negligible. And so these were numerical simulations with the Hamaker constant being some finite but very small thing. But we can compare these and interpret these in terms of a classical and weak solution if this term was actually absent. So if the opening range is small, then for short times, we're going to see solutions that are classical. They look like parabolas that kind of lower, and they're pinned at the boundaries, so they're parabolic profiles until the minimum of that parabola crosses through zero. And then this regularization has to kick in, or we actually then, without the regularization, we'd come to a weak solution where we'd have compact support, places where there would be no fluid layer, or actually very thin fluid layer, and then a meniscus, a half-parabolic profile that would look like a quasi-static meniscus moving with the upper eyelid. So the actuality is that there should be, in the actual dynamics, this is not going to be the real situation. The real dynamics is going to draw out a thin film left on that surface. So that's the classic Landau-Levitch dragout problem. If you have a plate dipped in a bath of fluid, and then you pull it out at some constant speed, the 1942 or 1943 result by authors shows that the film thickness is proportional to a power of the capillary number. And in the previous paper with Breward et al., we showed that, yes, if we change the surface tension to go to this zero capillary number limit, then we get the same scaling. In the few remaining moments, negative moments, maybe I should run faster or just stop, but I want to consider what happens with the boundary going instead of changing the surface tension, changing the speed of the boundary to see how things are affected. So let me quickly run through this. So and most of these are just going to be concise summaries via numerical simulation. I'm not going to try to derive any equations, but I'll just kind of hint at where there may be interesting differences between what you expect and what we see. So surfactant-free dynamics at low speed, so just pure film, we see profiles that look close to the quasi-static evolution. The film being drawn out is nearly flat, and that film thickness follows the Landau-Levitch scaling. At higher speeds, whether or not I include surfactant, things are not that much different, but at higher speeds, the film being drawn out is no longer flat as hoped for in Landau-Levitch, but it leaves a deposit left in the middle of a sizable drop of fluid there, and the red curves here are with surfactant. The blue curve is like without surfactant. So there's not that much difference. Again, we see some difference with and without surfactants that the story changes, early time versus later time, about thinning being slowed or thinning being sped up. But more notably, the film becomes non-uniform with higher speeds, and substantial mass, a droplet, is left in the middle of the domain. The meniscus also, instead of having this curvature that we had here, the meniscus actually becomes more highly curved with the increased speed of the problem. And surfactant also, like the fluid, remains primarily left over in the middle as the domain is stretching out. And the surfactant, again, has a changed behavior early time versus later time within the cycle. So I didn't include any plots in here, but the velocity could be derived in terms of having those from this. The fluid is definitely moving up with the. Well, so I'm showing here half the domain. So this is symmetric. So the fluid is going towards the moving boundary for sure, and the surfactant. I don't remember. It was we had plots in the paper with in the. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, the paper with Brewitt actually did consider the did show some plots of the velocity field and consider some more aspects of that in terms of trying to get a handle on the motion of the surfactant layer up or down also. But so let me just skip toward the end. And so there, so we see some agreement with Landau-Levitch scaling, but also some differences in terms of the size of the drop and. So it's interesting, though, that there's for a finite range of velocities, surfactants can either help or I mean, there's a finite range of velocities in which the surfactant effects change the minimum film thickness. For low speeds, we approach the Landau-Levitch behavior. For high speeds, we approach another kind of limiting behavior, but there is an intermediate range where the influence of surfactants is kind of flipped in the other direction. So that seems kind of unexpected or complicated to me. The independent of how the eyelid moves, most of the features are robust for the droplet left over in the middle or the capillary meniscus at the moving eyelid. So that's pretty robust no matter how you move the eyelid. The thin film structure does differ quite a bit, as you can see on this log-log scaling. I'll just say one or two words about why I included that rotation effect and what connection I tried to make the spin coating. So here was a picture of a rotating vertical Healy-Shaw cell just to kind of illustrate that you can get a parabolic profile if you spin it fast enough. And spin it faster, this parabola will hit bottom and then spread out in a kind of weak solution similar to what we had before. But if I rewrote the equation for the blinking problem using a coordinate that makes it on a fixed computational range in terms of eta, then that introduces this extra term, which kind of looks like another flux term, kind of similar to the contribution you get from centrifugal forces. The sign is flipped, but otherwise we see kind of similar things in terms of quasi-steady profiles and then non-monotone behaviors at higher speed. But the most interesting thing I found with this spin coding, and also I think it probably exists with the blinking problem, is that evolution with surfactant can dramatically sometimes slow the dynamics of the film evolution. So without the surfactant, I got to, in finite time, I got to one profile. With surfactant, it actually got to a very similar profile, but took twice as long to get there. So that was something unusual and unexpected to me. So this was a sampler of results I've kind of tried to connect together, but best I can say about surfactants and thin films, at least my understanding, it still seems complicated. But thank you.